My name is Martin Hadic. I'm from Hannover in Germany. And I want to extend a very warm welcome to all of you. And it's now my honor and pleasure to introduce you to the next speaker, who is Professor Ulrike Kämmerer, who studied biology with focus on molecular biology and virology and established RT-PCR for the detection of bacteria viruses in human tissue in the early 1990s. PCR was further frequently used by her since then in all research areas for detection of gene expression, cytokine profiles, and so on. Professor Kämmerer got famous in contributing as an expert in molecular biology to a law case in Weimar, Germany, where the judge, also following her reasoning on PCR test use, and based on her expert assessment, decided against official COVID regulations. Her house and office at the university were searched afterwards. So we are very happy to have you here. Ulrike, the floor is yours. So please go on with your presentation.
So the presentation is about the PCR and the background of the PCR, because this is the basis of the pandemia. So everybody knows the swab taking with the so-called cotton swabs, where we know it's not cotton swabs, but in principle, it takes up material out of the mouth or the nose. And this material is a crude mixture of human cells, bacteria, viruses, fungi, and even food residues. So a lot of human and not human genes. And the question is there a coronavirus inside this mixture of different genes? We have a pleiotropic number of coronaviruses, and even there's a lot of animal viruses in livestock, which you can have if you work in agricultural or have animals at home. There's some human normal coronaviruses. And so the problem is, are there coronaviruses in the swab sample? If yes, which type of coronaviruses are there in this sample here? Is it really the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which is searched for, then at which amount, which viral load? So can we judge if this is a PCR, if the person where the sample is taken from is infectious or not? And is a detectable virus able to replicate and make the infected person infectious? This is the critical questions for the background of the PCR. So the PCR itself, in case of coronaviruses, PCR can only amplify DNA. So coronaviruses are RNA viruses. So there's another step. This is a reverse transcriptation, where the RNA genome of the virus is transcribed into the DNA. So you have in the sample then a mixture of DNAs, including the, if there is a virus inside the coronavirus, and then you can subject it to the PCR reaction, and then the PCR is hopefully working. So important point is that the sample is completely denatured. So in the end, in this test, there's no intact cell, no intact bacterium, no intact virus. There's only the genome or the RNA, which is then transferred to the DNA. So the specificity of the PCR and the RNA production, the cDNA production, depends on the primers and the probes. This is a typical light cycler PCR, where you have two so-called primers, which identify the target sequence, and the third short oligonucleotide, which is a probe, which then is labeled with colors. And so in the end, you only see a color signal. You don't see some specific gene sequences. You only see a color signal in the common diagnostic PCRs. So this is a setting of a PCR, like here in the first PCR setting of Drosten. You have two primers, the reverse and the forward primer, and you have a probe in between, which is then which produces a light cycler signal then if you have a specific signal. So the most important point is in the PCR, it duplicates the original gene in a log 2 row. So and then if you want to have say at least 1 million detectable targets in your end product of the PCR. The cycle number you need for copying, it depends on the starting targets. If you have, for example, two samples in the swab, then you need 19 cycles of PCR to reach the target of about 1 million. If you start with 1,000 copies of the virus genome in the sample, then you need only 10. So the lower the cycle number, the higher was the starting amount of the target. So this is a typical light cycler PCR, which is from the original CDC protocol from China. And here you see the typical patient, you need around 22 to 27 cycles of PCR to get a good signal. The typical PCR scheme is seen here. So you normally have here the cycle number up to 40, not more. And the more targets are in a sample, for example, if you add internal controls or housekeeping genes, they come normally with a very low amount of copying, and then you have at a higher amount have your positive samples. And a CT over 36 normally is excluded because it's negative. And even here, by mistakes of the polymerase, this is all negative samples. They then reach a positive, or they get above the threshold and become positive as well. So this is the main problem of false positives, that the PCR makes too many copy rounds, and the PCR problems with the polymerase reaction then give a positive signal and you think you are positive, and in the end you have no virus inside. So perfect PCR must be something like this. You have a virus load control with clearly defined coronaviruses in a dilution row of 3 to 4 points. Here, for example, 10 to the 8, 10 to the 7, and 10 to the 6 viruses. And then you see that the higher the virus amount is in the sample, the earlier the curves rise above the threshold. And then you ignore all the very high CT values as negative. And then you can calculate the viral mRNA, which is amplified in the original sample. So you can't judge on this point about the whole virus because you have only this very small pieces of nucleic acid in your PCR. So back to the initial problem, you have the mixture of different genes from human cells, bacteria, viruses, fungi, food residues in your swab. So to judge if there's coronaviruses in it, which specific subtype, is it really SARS-CoV-2, which virus genome number, is it an infectious virus load or not, and is the virus able to replicate or infect, then you have the solution. If the test system is well created and can highly specifically identify the target gene and did not react with other gene targets, then yes, you can say there is a gene part of a coronavirus in your PCR. If the virus or if the PCR is specific enough, you can subtype the target and you can say it's indeed coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 or it's coronavirus SARS or it's MERS or whatever. The test system allows a quantifying of the starting number of targets. If you have a very well established system with an amplification factor known and very clear standardized samples, as I've shown you. But a PCR can never decide if the whole virus genome is in the sample because it only detects a small piece of the whole gene. And since the target organism is destroyed for the analysis, a PCR can never tell you if the virus or if the target in the sample is really infectious or in a type of virus able to replicate. So I think, Martin, you have now some questions you should discuss.
Yes, thank you very much for this presentation. I mean, the first thing I would like to ask you is, the first test established to identify infected and at that time sick persons was the PCR. utilizing the so-called Corman-Drosten protocol. Despite harsh criticism by several international experts, this protocol was and still is used in some labs to classify the status of infection. What is your statement on that?
Well, the PCR, the original protocol by Corman and Drosten, it's a weak PCR because design, as I showed you, it's important to have a very, very good design on a PCR to get really the target you want to have. And the design of this PCR, it was not a very good design. There was a lot of mistakes in it, so it was prone to produce a lot of false positives. So, and in the end, the problem is that PCR for analysis in samples from patients without any clinical signs, any symptoms, this is more the area of the medical doctors. This doesn't allow to judge really if this detected gene belongs to a target which makes the person ill. So this PCR still, a PCR is a perfect method if you want to do research on very rare genes, but a PCR is not a valuable method if you want to judge on a flu-like disease, in my opinion.
May I just ask you in detail? I mean, you showed how this PCR works, but is this technique, I want to really to ask you on this very specific detail, because this is important in practice. Yeah. Is this technique suitable to classify persons as being infectious?
No. No, because as I showed you, you can't, by the PCR, you can only amplify a small piece of the gene. And this small piece of the gene can be derived from a really infectious virus, but it can also be derived from a virus which was killed by your immune system. And upon destroying the virus, this small pieces of original virus genome, they can stay in the cells for a very long time. And if you scratch the cells with the swabs, then you can have the reminiscence of the virus and can amplify it. And the body still has managed to destroy the virus. So no, in the PCR without a cell culture can, in my hands, not judge on infectivity.
Thank you. This was very clear. I mean, for the maybe for the first time in medical history, a single lab test was and still is used to discriminate in between healthy and sick people. How would you judge on this procedure?
Well, I think this is a problem of the MDs because normally, as I have learned, you have symptoms of, for example, flu-like symptoms, and then you go to the physician, and if he or she wants to know which type of virus or bacteria induce your symptoms, then you do a differential diagnosis. But if you have no symptoms to detect an infectious virus, that was never done before for very well reasons, because it makes no sense.
One of the cornerstones of the quality of tests are specific means which are classified and which are called sensitivity and specificity. What do these expressions mean?
So sensitivity means how many of those initial targets can you detect in a given sample. So the higher the sensitivity of a test is, the lower amount of targets you need to detect them. So in this log 2 row, I have shown, for example, if you have in the swab two samples, a very sensitive PCR can detect them. And a not so sensitive PCR, for example, needs 100 samples to amplify them to a reliable result. And the specificity, that depends on the design of the PCR, on the how good the primers annealed to the target sample, how specific they are selected, that there's no cross reactivity, how good the polymerase works. So in the end, specificity means you have really only a signal with your wanted target and no cross reactivity with, for example, in case of coronaviruses, with feline peritonitis virus or with a human common cold virus or even with the MERS virus. So there should be a highly specific selection of the PCR. This works if you know the sequence, and we know the sequence for SARS-CoV-2, and you can do a highly specific PCR. But this was not done in the majority of PCRs used worldwide.
Well, based on the huge consequences of positive tests in merely all countries, know this, isolation and quarantine, repeated tests, mandatory delay of trips, not being fit for work, whatever, do you think that the sufficient framework was set up to minimize false positive results by all means?
I think now the tests become better and better. But in the beginning, there was a lot of problems with the testing. So they did not do the proper internal controls. They did not use the virus load controls to judge on at which CT, for example, the PCR gets positive. There was no rules from the governments on how many independent genes should be used. So in the beginning, the WHO said 3 genes, and it said 2 genes. And then in the end, with the mass testing, it was only 1 gene. Yes. And the lower independent targets you have, the higher is the rate of false positives. So I think the PCR can be performed highly safe and valuable, but it was not done in the majority of testings. And therefore, we have to think about that we had a large majority of non-correct PCR testings.
Professor Kemmerer, my last question is, what is your take-home message out of your business?
I think it's an overestimation of a lab test. So PCR is used, it's a perfect method in all the molecular labs, and even it's a very well method in forensic medicine and in, for example, even for blood product testing to search for HIV and so on. But it's not the method of choice to select coronavirus or even respiratory viruses. So we should stop this and go back to the roots. So the medical doctors decide there's a person who has symptoms, who is ill, and who needs to be treated, independent of the test.
Okay. Professor Kemmerer, thank you very much for your contribution. We're sharp on the 20 minutes, so that's perfect. All in all, due to technical reasons, we are in a delay of 10 minutes, but at the end with the panel discussion, we will get that back. And I hope to see you there again. Okay. Thank you very much indeed.